You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
If you know me at all, you know that I cannot stand Dustin Pedroia. I loathe Pedroia.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
I hate even just talking about him right now. It makes me feel uneasy that I'm even mentioning him.
It's weird that he would end up on the show notes.
Yeah, it is weird. I don't know who makes the show notes, but...
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Tell you what, if it made Mike this upset, I'm all for it, so hopefully she does it again.
I'm not even upset. I feel like it's some pop culture thing that we need to talk about.
I almost refuse to come on this show when you show me the outline with Ted Lowry on it.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson and Mike Warner. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Excited for today. Always love having this particular guest on. And, sticking with the keystone here, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be a good episode. Going to talk about second base today. We have a fantastic guest on, a repeat visitor to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits studio, so we'll get to him in just one moment. Mike, how are you?
I'm in a loving and nurturing mood, given it's almost Valentine's Day. I think that we should have a nice, loving theme to this show. No?
Boo.
Yeah, I don't know.
play some saxophone in the background or something while I'm talking. I think that would make it a little more appropriate.
I could have a little song. Maybe I'll put at the end instead of our traditional outro music. How about that?
Do "Careless Whisper" by George Michael, so that way we can remember him better than Adele did. By the way, after she stopped about a minute into her song to tribute George Michael, she ended up having to stop the whole show and then restart. Which I mean, that was I know I'm being a little nerdy watching the Grammys, but I'm a music fan. I can't help it.
Yeah, I literally had no idea what you were talking about.
Yeah, Adele, while singing a tribute to George Michael, stopped in the middle of it and restarted the whole entire thing. She was like, shit, you know, she cussed on stage live and then restarted the whole entire thing. And it was better after that. And everybody gave her a standing ovation and she won a million awards. But it was kind of terrible.
This is getting fired.
Yeah, this is an atrocious conversation. And Mike's
I'm sorry. Some people might actually be interested just because you two are doing whatever on Sunday nights, probably something better than I'm doing. Doesn't mean that's not important.
I don't know what I was doing, but it was certainly better than that, so I agree.
Yeah, no, I don't even remember what I was doing, but yeah, I agree. It was better than what you were doing. and more than likely, if they're listening to this podcast, they're probably not that interested in the Grammys. Let's just move right on to our fantastic guest. We have Tim Heaney from RotoWire on. Tim, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, guys, I'm doing all right. I mean, Oh, I'm sorry. I just messed up the intro there. Can we restart the podcast?
Thank you. Thank you.
I saw it. I saw that.
I appreciate it. Can you tell these guys I'm not crazy? God, watching
well, I don't know about that. But...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that whole thing. I mean, there's a reason that you want to tribute to somebody, but you should also be a professional and kind of have everything kind of wrapped up and tight, you know, in that certain part of the show. So I don't know how you guys feel about that. Mike, I guess you obviously have some feelings about it.
Well, she all I think the bigger thing is I applaud her for turning it around and, you know, getting it right and saying, like, you know what, I don't want to mess it up for him because he's too much of an icon for me to mess it up. But at the same time, I didn't like how she won all the awards and was pretty much like, giving them to Beyonce at the end. Like, she was pretty much saying, like, I don't deserve these. You deserve these, Beyonce. I'm going to keep crying up here because I'm sad that you didn't win. But, you know, I appreciate everybody for voting for me.
Is that just, like, her way of preventing Kanye West from getting up there from, and being like,
well, she might as well do it herself. Stuff you, yeah.
Beyonce was the best artist this year.
Yeah, that probably is.
Tell you what, if it made Mike this upset, I'm all for it. So hopefully she does it again.
I'm not even upset. I feel like it's some pop culture thing that we need to talk about. I mean, guys, we can't just strictly be baseball all the time. We have to be a little bit more well-rounded.
Well,
we are literally 4 minutes into this podcast. It is completely off the fucking rails.
No, it's not. No, it's not. We'll bring it back in.
Tim, for those who don't know who you are, please tell them where they can hear you, read your stuff, and follow you on social media.
Well, you guys can follow me on Twitter at Tim_Heaney, Heaney. I actually manage or try to manage the social media department for RotoWire. You know, it's pretty fun putting all this content together. We have so much great stuff going on right now. MLB draft kits going on. Our magazine's actually going to be hitting newsstands soon, and you can actually order it on the website right now. You can always have a free trial, 10 days at RotoWire. Just sign up for a free account and just kind of peruse what's going on there. You know, I'll be hopping on the Fantasy Baseball Podcast once per week when the season – actually, when March starts, you know, spring training, we got to get the gears going for that. And, you know, you guys can – like I said, you guys can tweet me any questions you want, and well, you guys can, you know, listen to me and critique me as much as you want during the season.
We definitely do. You know, we're big fans of RotoWire and everything you guys do over there. So, and I just got the baseball draft kit or the baseball package for the season because I love the draft software. I get the draft software every year, and that's, you know, pretty much the only thing I buy nowadays. But, you know, be able to have the auction numbers and projections and be able to edit them yourselves is pretty awesome.
Yeah, definitely a tool that makes things a little bit easier. It paints the whole picture of what you need while you're drafting. And, you know, it's a nice little easy entry for, you know, player values and stuff. You can do auction stuff with it. You can mock draft with it. It does third round reversal NFBC for you guys who play that out there. It's very handy. Yeah, it's just a great tool. And thank you for plugging it instead of me having to do my job. So thanks.
Anytime. That's why I'm here. We're going to be talking about second base today, and it's a stacked position, as I'm sure that'll get mentioned throughout the podcast. I'm sure there's going to be mentions of the labor mixed draft that is going on right now. So I'm sure we'll kind of touch on that, but we're not going to cover that in depth, even though Mike really, really wants to. And then I'm sure I'll make comments about the fact I was in the CBS AL only auction earlier today, because the over-under has been set at 2.5. How many times are going to mention it? And it's definitely going over.
I tried to be generous with the over-under, and I'm sick. I might be too low.
Yeah, no, totally throwing this out the window. So let's just jump right into second base, talk about the first guy. And the first guy is my favorite dude in the world. That's Jose Altuve. Tim, where would you take Jose Altuve in the first round this year?
You know, I've been trying to kind of see where I could experiment taking him in drafts. My evaluation system for my aggregate rankings at RotoWire that I'm a part of the process has him coming out at number 3. I think I'm actually kind of in agreement with that because, yeah, look, there's a lot of questions about Altuve's power. His Statcast's numbers don't have him as like a guy who's going to scald the ball every time he's up there. And his slugging percentage, you know, it's a big jump, probably a little bit too high. But, you know, the last 2 years, he's nearly doubled his homer to fly ball rates. You know, at 20 home runs, I'm not going to say he's going to get any more than 24, but I think 15 to 20 is your safe bet. And in years he's hit 7 or 15, he's still a $40-something player most of the time because of the stolen bases. Now, obviously where he hits in the order is going to determine the runs and the RBIs and the stolen base attempts. But, there's few true five category guys in fantasy, especially that batting average profile, which is definitely one of the best for hitting 300. I think that Altuve's a guy that's going to be safe regardless of what he offers and where he hits. He's going to, you know, get those stats for you somehow. So, you know, that's a guy that's really safe. And, you know, I kind of agree with my system putting him at number 3 at that point, just because he does have that great floor. Even if his power goes down, there's just so much he can offer for you.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Jose Altuve this year?
Just safety, safety, safety. That's what he represents. Top 3, I'm absolutely fine with. I think top 2, you could certainly make an argument for if you wanted to go that route as well. certainly the power won't be upwards of 25 home runs, which is essentially what he did last season. But I do think, based on what he's been doing in terms of his fly ball percentage and his, you know, ISO, home run to fly ball rate, et cetera, that we can expect at least 15 to 18. He's the only guy in the majors to have 30 plus stolen bases in 5 plus seasons. Not only that, he's had 576 at bats or more in every year since 2012 as well. In the first round, you're looking for safety. That's exactly what he represents. Even if he were to have a down season relative to what he's done the last couple of years, it would still put him somewhere in the vicinity of $25+ in roto value earnings. And that is just, that's safety. That's what exactly what you want in the first round. I think he is as safe as a bet as it comes. And I'm absolutely in love with him. I think that he can do no wrong.
Matt, are you in agreement about Jose Altuve?
Yeah, definitely. I actually have him as my second player overall behind Trout. I have, like everyone said, I mean, you got to love the safety. I don't think, like Mike touched on, I don't think he had 24 homers again, but I mean, even if he had 20 and 22 and still grabs, you know, 20, 25 bases, hitting third in the order this year or second in the order, wherever they have him penciled in, it's going to be a question how much he runs because Houston's going to have a really good offense. So stolen bases might take a tick down, but I mean, you're still getting, he's a lock for a 2020 season, in my opinion. And that's probably selling it a little bit short. He's a lock for a 300 average with the last 3 years. He's been 341, 313, 338. You got to love the batting average category. He's a true five category guy. There's not many of those guys left, and he's elite in almost everything. Home runs, obviously, for a second baseman, he's going to be in the upper level for that. But the position's a little bit deep, but I'm still taking him number two. I mean, he's actually underappreciated because of Mike Trout. That's how good he is.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Matt. I've got him as my number two player overall. You know, I was one of the few people in the industry that had him as high up last year as I did. I believe I had him number three last year. Above Bryce Harper. And, you know, I just love the safety. He's also got just an extreme upside. I believe he's the only player in the last 4 years to finish first on the player radar out of hitters twice. So, I mean, that to me shows he's got an extreme upside as well, as opposed to, you know, also just having an extremely safe floor. You know, I know it's a deeper position than it's been in years past. That doesn't scare me. I'm taking the best player with the top two pick, and that to me is Trout, then Altuve.
Yeah.
I think the crazy thing for me – go ahead, Tim. Sorry.
No, go ahead. All right. Well, if you want a fun stat, you know, if you look at the average fly ball and home run leaderboard put together by RotoWire's Jeff Zimmerman for his own website, Baseball Heat Maps, you see that Jose Altuve actually had a higher fly ball distance average than Chris Davis of the A's. So that's pretty interesting, and there's a lot of guys because Altuve actually ranks 51st among you know, qualifying hitters for that stat. So it's very, very interesting that, you know, that I was saying StatCast doesn't recognize I think what Altuve can do when he actually makes contact with the ball. He just has a great swing path, great, you know, connection through the zone that gets very underrated sometimes with the power aspect.
I was going to say, I think it's pretty crazy. You look at the NFBC, it's got the minimum pick and the maximum pick and the average pick, obviously. And Altuve's the highest he's been taken, or should say the lowest he's been taken in any draft is three. He hasn't even gone second. I kind of think that's kind of – it's not weird per se, but it's just kind of – I guess it's an oddity. I mean, I just think he's under – it's kind of weird because you look at guys like, you know, Trout's going first, obviously. Betts and Bryant's gone first. Kershaw's gone first. Trey Turner's gone first, but Altuve hasn't. I mean, yeah.
Trey Turner.
Yeah, Trey Turner gone second. There's a reason I didn't put Trey Turner on this podcast notes. We'll talk about him in a later episode this week, but him going one in an NFBC league to me is insane. You know, I haven't done my NFBC draft. I expect to do it here pretty soon. If I have the number two pick, I'm taking Altuve, so that'll get raised up if I'm picking at the top of the draft. But let's go ahead and move on to the next guy. It's Daniel Murphy. Had an outstanding season last year in his first season with the Nationals. 25 home runs, a .347 average. Tim, what are your thoughts on Daniel Murphy this year?
I do think there's a bit of downside. Batting average, obviously .347. That's nothing you should ever bank on from anybody. Maybe Jose Altuve. That's about it. But you know, Murphy. I think it was weird because his power exploded, obviously, and his batting average also exploded. You know, the BABIP was .348. The average was .347. That's like, it's very rare that you find the exact same number of that. You know, there was some luck involved in it being that high. But obviously, there's such a great profile there for batting 300 regardless. He makes so much contact. He rarely strikes out. The power probably is going to draw back a little bit because, you know, I do believe in it, though, because the changes he made in the 2015 postseason, I think, were legit because, you know, the way he changed his swing, I think it was his leg was moving differently after he changed things. And the power just, you know, it really took off as his lower body got kind of, you know, recalibrated that sort of way. But, you know, kind of like Altuve, you know, 15 to 20 homers, 300 average. Obviously, the stolen bases is where you're not going to really find him as much. You know, but the batting average alone is probably to push him to top 40 if he, you know, if he keeps this kill set pretty well. You know, the stolen base, lack thereof, I guess, kind of makes me a little bit less excited to really, really pay highly for him, I guess, so to speak, because you kind of want a little bit more speed from your middle infield most of the time, unless it's like a Robinson Cano or something like that. So, I mean, Murphy's got the skills to be a really, really safe, you know, fourth or fifth round type of pick if you establish a lot more speed before that. But, you know, I would just be a little bit careful about that.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Daniel Murphy for this year?
I love Murphy, and I mean, I've been high on him for the last couple of years. I missed the train on him a little bit the previous year after his hot playoff run, but you got to love what he's doing with this. The changes with Kevin Long appear to have stuck. You know, the change, the approach is different. The batting average, like you said, 347, that's not happening. He's a 296 career hitter, though, so I do think it's going to remain strong. I'm worried about the lower body injuries. The last three of he's missed parts of, I can't even talk. The last three seasons, he's missed parts of the year with glute injuries, calf injuries, and hamstring injuries. So I don't know if that's part of just body breaking down or the lower body thing. And I mean, Tim made a good point without the steals. But Murphy's got the dual positional eligibility, which is kind of nice. You can put him at first base too. And I'm not afraid to do that this year with the first base pool. I'm not afraid to put Murphy as my first baseman if I, depending on how the roster construction goes. Because, I mean, you're hitting on Murphy early enough. Where if you take him, I mean, you have plenty of time to get a second baseman or a first baseman later and just kind of let the draft fall the way that it does. But I'm high on Murphy. I understand that there's a little bit of injury risk and there's no speed contributions, but got to like the batting average. And I think he's good for 20 home runs if he's healthy, so I'll take him.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Daniel Murphy?
Sorry, I'm still reminiscing about the conversation we had a couple years ago with Jose Altuve versus Bryce Harper, and we all know how that worked out. But anyways, moving on to Daniel Murphy, it's tough with me on him because I really like the player. I like the profile as well. Ever since he made the mechanical changes, he has certainly, and fantasy owners as well, have reaped the rewards of that. Do I think the power stays what it was last season? No, I don't. But he was consistent all year. You know, usually when I see guys that, you know, have a spike in their value one year, I like to look at the first and second half splits. And in the second half, he was just as good, especially in the plate skills. You know, he's been top 10 in strikeout percentage over the last 3 years, and he had a 90% contact rate in the second half last year. On top of that, he hit .344 from July on as well. I think the batting average is as safe as it comes. The power, I do think, since he had a 42% fly ball rate last year, which was a career high, some of that can certainly be a result of the mechanical changes, but some of that also could be just a spike for one season. If you tick it down to 10% in his home run to fly ball rate and maybe 40% or 39% in his fly ball rate, you're looking at much more of a 18 home run guy as opposed to 25. But still, I think the biggest, you know, perk and value for him is his eligibility at multiple places and the fact that he's safe in batting average. He's going to be hitting in a good lineup. The Nationals have top five in stolen base attempts under Dusty Baker last season. So he might get a few more opportunities to run this year. All around, a really solid player. I haven't ended up with him in any drafts just based on the fact that the position as a whole is so deep and he doesn't really give you immense upside in one particular category, but I do think he's safe across the board. Matt mentioned the injuries. He's had 499 at bats or more in every season except for one since 2009. He missed 2010 as well, but other than that, he's been pretty solid over these last 3 years or three of the last 4 years in terms of plate appearances and at bats, and overall has just been pretty safe in terms of value as well. So I don't think there's anything bad to say about him.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything bad to say about him either, but I think one of the things you mentioned is considering where he's going. He's currently going as number five second baseman off the board, 37th, almost 38th overall in average pick on NFBC. There tends to be guys in that spot at other positions I just prefer. Either they offer some immense upside in, you know, in multiple categories as opposed to, you know, four categories, or they're at a more scarce position, and I feel more comfortable using the tiebreaker, the position as a tiebreaker. And so I haven't ended up with Daniel Murphy in any of my mocks or any of the drafts I've done so far, and I don't think I'm going to end up with him at all. I do like the fact that he has first base eligibility. It's interesting, though, that the Nationals signed Adam Lynn today. So you kind of wonder, where are they going to play him? Are they going to play him more at second, where Trey Turner could be? I don't think he should play second. He's not a very good defensive player. So I assumed they were going to move him to first full time and leave Ryan Zimmerman without a spot, but it seems like they may move him around the diamond, which could be interesting if he was able to gain third base eligibility too at some point. But we'll see kind of how that plays itself out. I like guys, in the outfield or pitchers or other guys, around that 35 to 40 pick. Unless he drops, I'm probably not going to end up with him in any drafts. Let's go ahead and move over to a guy I think I will end up with in a number of drafts, though it depends on kind of how much people, overpay for speed this year. That is D. Gordon. I'll start with you this time, Mike. What are your thoughts on D. Gordon this year?
Well, I just drafted him in a longtime home league that I've been participating in, so I'm obviously in. Mind you, the steroid problem is in the past, and I'm not somebody that judges guys based on their decisions, especially morally. But even if you look at the second half, or really from July on, once he did return, he ended up having 24 stolen bases in that time. The 260 to 270 batting average, I think, is right for somebody like him. But I just like the fact that he offers an immense amount of speed and is available pretty much a two-round discount compared to last season. I just think that that's a premier value at a position that, while it is deep, doesn't offer that much speed as D. Gordon can offer. He's second to only Billy Hamilton in stolen bases over the last 5 years. Altuve is third on that list as well. But the fact of the matter is that you're paying for speed with him. There's no real batting average upside or any power upside as well. But I think the Marlins will have a decent lineup this year, especially if Stanton stays healthy. There might be some run upside there. He did have 88 and 92 runs scored in 2014 and 2015, respectively. That leaves a little bit of value as well. All in all, I'm definitely in on D. Gordon because I think that he has 40 to 50 stolen base potential, and he's somebody that has depressed value based on him getting suspended last year.
Tim, what are your thoughts on D. Gordon this year?
I agree with Mike in the fact that I don't think there's going to be any physical concerns with what came out of the suspension and all that. I mean, obviously, taking a while maybe to hit four home runs like he did in 2015, that's a very big, it's a very big disadvantage for what he was offering. But I think there's obviously something to say for putting together a certain, a team construction that, Gordon could balance out a team where if you drafts a lot of guys without stolen bases in the first couple rounds of a mixed draft or something like that, you can come back and have D. Gordon with that immense speed, that 50 steal speed, but I don't know. I don't like to draft guys that don't have much speed most of the time. I like to draft in the first couple rounds guys that do have the power speed combination. It would almost be like doubling down if you take a D. Gordon type, because I think the risk with the overvaluing the speed this year could throw off some ways of could be a case where you do overpay for the one category that you might not actually have to overpay for, because you might get some, you might draft a team where you can get stolen bases from a lot of sources in the early rounds and have a guy like Gordon. Not saying it might be overkill, but it's always good to have a guy that has that much value there. So yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably gonna have to use like a case by case situation a Gordon in most drafts this year.
Matt, what are your thoughts on D. Gordon this year?
I'm kind of right there with Tim. I mean, I love Trey Turner. We were talking about before the show. I mean, his price is going too high. I mean, if I'm looking for those stolen bases, and the question mark with Turner is the power output. I mean, obviously he's going to have more power than D. Gordon, but we don't know, how many home runs is Turner going to end up with this year. With Gordon, you're not getting any. What you are getting, though, is you are getting game-changing speed. The thing that I'm worried about a little bit with the PED thing is, what about now? He might get more off days now, obviously, with, I think, a lot of recovery time with a lot of those PED things. So he could be getting more random days off, which is, if you can manage it and you play in a daily league, it's not going to be as frustrating. I mean, he's still a young player. He's still only 28. So, it's not like he's going to need a lot of time off, but it's interesting with the speed guys. The recovery guys always seem the speed delay guys always seem to, you know, recover fast with all that. But with D Gordon, I have him as my fifth second baseman behind, you know, the big four everyone already knows. And I'm fine with him where he's going. I'm, like I said, me being a Turner guy and then seeing the prices he's going for, I might back off Turner a little bit and then I'll take my speed with D Gordon. But then again, it's a question of the power, because with D Gordon, there's a very, very good chance you're getting a one-category contributor, and I don't know if you want to use a pick that high on that type of player.
I don't mind using, you know, a pick on that kind of player, because I'm in on Billy Hamilton as well as D. Gordon. My only issue is what I'm seeing, and one of the things I saw today in the CBS draft or auction, ding, ding, ding,
two,
is speed was just so overpriced. And, like, I ended up leaving, you know, I tried to stay disciplined, and so I ended up leaving the auction with not enough speed, because it was insane what people were paying, and you're seeing that in snake drafts as well. And so, to me, if I can get him in the fourth or fifth round in a 15-team league, I'm happy. But I think in a lot of these drafts, you're going to have to take him in the third, and that's where you really start pushing the limits, because I think, to me, he shouldn't be a third-round pick. I thought coming into the off season that, and in some of the mock drafts I was doing in November and in October, I was getting him in the seventh round coming off the PED suspension. Now we're seeing him in the fourth and the third. I think that is a little bit too high, a little bit more than I'm willing to go. I'm sure I will end up with him on a team or two, just not as many as I originally thought back in the fall. Let's talk about DJ LeMahieu. Matt, what are your thoughts on LeMahieu this season?
I like LeMahieu. I think he's one of the most underrated fantasy assets out there. I mean, I think as a common theme from second base, we've been seeing second base is a spot where you can really carry your batting averages from. There's a lot of high average guys, a lot of high contact guys like this. And LeMahieu is great. The 348 average last year, he actually won the batting title, which is, I don't know if enough people even...
Yeah, because he sat out the last couple days.
That is true, but no one remembers that in a couple years, right? Everyone just remembers who won the batting title.
I actually think people will remember that.
They should. Daniel Murphy's going to remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the thing with LeMahieu is, you know, you're going to get about 10 to 12 steals, if that. He's not... He had 23 stolen bases in 2015. I don't think he does that again. I'm banking him down to about the 10, 12, maybe 15, but he was not very efficient in a couple years past. So I don't know how much he's going to run. Coors Field, you don't want to run too much anyways. But you look at LeMahieu, if he can keep up that power output, 32 doubles, 8 triples, 11 home runs, and he surpassed his career high in slugging by a significant margin. The ISO went way up this last season. He stayed healthy, which he's done. He's played 149 games. 150 games, 146 the last three seasons. I mean, I think he's a batting average anchor for you, but he's not going to hit 348 again. Is he going to hit 320? I can't predict that. Coors Field's nice to have. But I think he's a lock for 300, and he's going to be in a nice lineup. It's just he's a solid option that people are forgetting about. So I don't mind getting caught with LeMahieu. It's all good with me.
Tim, are you okay with getting caught with LeMahieu?
That's kind of where the fringe value kind of starts hold for me. Obviously, great hitting setting. He's kind of like the new version of what Daniel Murphy used to be. You figure, obviously, high batting average, you know, very nice, you know, at least double-digit stolen base type of value. Double-digit home runs, likely. I'm just worried about if he's going to actually continue hitting second versus seventh. That's kind of like the big Colorado lineup thing I'm looking for in the preseason. If LeMahieu's going to hit second, or if Trevor Story's going to hit second, and whoever's going to hit seventh. Obviously, you can argue that Colorado's lineup is so deep that hitting seventh wouldn't hurt either one of these guys, but I think LeMahieu is a little bit more dependent on runs for his value than Trevor Story is, or and most of the other second basemen that we talk about are the ones that mostly get taken before him. I think LeMahieu needs those plate appearances to really, you know, jack up his value and make the most of his batting average. So, I mean, I'm not as high on LeMahieu as most guys are, I think, but I have him ranked as my 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Actually, my 11th second baseman. Very interesting there. But I think that's because I am kind of downplaying the plate appearances a little bit here, because, maybe he will get moved over the lineup a little bit. But still a very useful player. A guy I definitely would want as a middle infielder in a mixed league. But, you know, some guy's going to wait and take him as their starting second baseman. Just a guy that's kind of in flux for what I think the preseason is going to hold for him.
Mike, what are your thoughts on LeMahieu?
It's pretty interesting. Three of the second basemen we've talked about already were in the running for the batting title last year between Altuve, Murphy, and LeMahieu, with obviously LeMahieu coming up triumphant in his sitting out the last few games. Either way, what I like about LeMahieu, his home ballpark, he hit 390 there last season, which is obviously amazing and a product of Coors Field itself. And I love the fact that he bumped his walk rate up to 11%. He had also only a 14% strikeout rate last year, which gave him a 0.83 strikeout to walk ratio among the league leaders. Really solid. What I don't like about him is that he had the highest BABIP in all of baseball. That was at 390 almost. And his career track record has him at about 350. I don't like to just, you know, simply say, oh, BABIP analysis here, and then he's going to regress. But I do think it is going to regress a little bit because that's just not sustainable for me. He hits too many ground balls to hit any more home runs than what he did last year at 11. That was a career high in RBIs. The stolen bases, while they were down a little bit, I could actually see them creep back up, but the home runs go down. So I think he'll be similar to where he was last year, but without the batting average. I think he'll probably sit in the 290 to 300 range, which is fine. But he's just, to me, he's not really that inspiring. If you're in a deeper format and you need somebody that offers some stability, I think that he's fine there. But if you're looking for upside, especially in shallower formats, I don't think that he is your guy. There's more tantalizing options later on in the draft for me, or, you know, earlier in the draft if you want to go with you know, Trey Turner and, you know, reap the rewards if everybody else gets a breakout Trey Turner season. But I think that he's more of a safe lower level option than he is a high upside play.
Yeah, in 2012, between AAA and in the major league squad, he hit 3 home runs. In 2013, he hit 3 home runs between AAA and the major league squad. In 2014, he hit 5 home runs. 2015, he hit 6 home runs. And then he hits 11, so almost doubling his career high in 2016. I think that number's coming down. I don't think it's come. I think he's more of a safe bet for 7 to 8 home runs, stolen bases, you know, maybe 10 to 15. And I do think the average is coming down. I think he's going to regress this season. And even if you could say that, okay, he's going to hit 320, he's going to hit, you know, 8-9 home runs, he's going to steal 15, you know, 10 to 15 bags, that doesn't fit into my typical draft strategy to begin with. I tend to want a punt average to begin with, so the huge high average guys aren't guys who aren't my radar for the most part anyways, because I'm paying for a statistic. I'm trying to punt anyways. So I'm all out on DJ LeMahieu. You know, like I said, doesn't fit in my strategy. But aside from that, I think he's taking a step back in a lot of the categories that makes him special. And so for that reason, I can't go for LeMahieu at all.
He's also the 86th pick overall, which is really high
for somebody
of his skill set. You would much rather wait on other options. I think Logan Forsythe can offer you not the same speed, but a lot of the same things that you're looking for in terms of, you know, categorical production. He can do that, and he's going at pick 240. I mean, I think that there is a really high price for somebody that doesn't offer upside in a lot of categories.
I mean, he's really just a compiler. Which is fine, but as a top 100 player, do you want a compiler? I don't.
No. And I think it was a really pussy move to sit out those last few games, and we should penalize him for that.
Yes.
Ted Williams is rolling over in his freezer.
He had a home run, I believe, on his 406 day, right? Yeah.
So. Yeah, he didn't have to play either. He played both games with a doubleheader or something like that, I believe. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He wrote the book on hitting, literally, so, you know.
All right, let's talk about Dustin Pedroia real quick. Tim, are you in on old man Pedroia?
He's a very much like a LeMahieu that you can get probably like 5 or 6 rounds later, at least. So I wouldn't mind him there. Obviously, you know, we're not looking for much upside here. We're just kind of looking for, as you guys said, you know, kind of that stable middle infield type, just to kind of find some, you know, stability in there. Obviously, the lineup's going to be pretty good. I think it might be not as good as some other people think without David Ortiz, but, you know, Mitch Moreland could do just a job enough. And Pedroia, obviously, we're probably batting in a high, you know, a spot, a lineup spot that's going to be good for run creation in one way or another, runs, RBIs. So obviously nice little bounce back last year with health and all that. You know, do you trust a guy who's good, you know, 33 to do that again, especially playing a position as rough as second base? You know, not strongly, but obviously that's why he's fallen so far in these ADPs. But obviously still very good peripherals for batting average. You know, that's kind of what you count on there. And, you know, like I said, much cheaper DJ LeMahieu, a little bit less of an advantage at home. But, yeah, so, someone that you want to look for if you're really, really scrambling, I guess.
Mike, are you buying in on Pedroia at all?
If you know me at all, you know that I cannot stand Dustin Pedroia. I loathe Pedroia. I hate even just talking about him right now. It makes me feel uneasy that I'm even mentioning him.
It's weird that he would end up on the show notes.
Yeah, it is weird. I don't know who makes the show notes, but whoever did certainly knew that I would agitate me. Anyways, no, I'm not in on Dustin Pedroia. The only reason that he had a resurgence last season was because he had 100 runs, 105 runs scored for the first time since 2009. You take Dave Ortiz out of this lineup, I don't think that's happening again. I think that this Boston lineup is way overrated. You know, they were the number one team last season in runs scored, if I'm not mistaken. And now they take away David Ortiz. You insert Pablo Sandoval. You also insert Mitch Moreland to this team. And you have a rookie in Andrew Benintendi that I know everybody loves, but we don't know what he's going to produce. I just think that this Boston lineup is way overrated for what they actually can or will do this year. There's no way that Pedroia can he's a health risk. Second off, he's not going to score 100 runs again. I actually have him penciled in right now for 67, which I know is on the low side of things, but I don't think that he will be healthy. I also don't think the home runs are going to be, you know, anywhere near 20. He had 15 last year, and that was with a power uptick. There's no way he hits for the same batting average, which was 318 last year. That's going to drop down to probably the 280 mark. His career average is 290, but he hadn't even hit 290 since, again, 2010. They're just across the board, there's really not any upside here. I think that he's going to regress in a big way. He's probably more of a $10 player. Right now, he's going pick 146. I think that's a little bit high. I don't think it's outrageous. But again, I can't stand Dustin Pedroia, can't stand his beard, can't stand the team that he plays for, and I can't stand anything about him. So go to hell.
Well, how the hell am I supposed to follow that up? I had my hot take cannon all fired up and ready to say that the Red Sox lineup was all overrated, and then you ruined all that. But I mean, I guess trading for Chris Sale is a good way to cover up that you're replacing David Ortiz with Mitch Moreland.
I just want to add something. HQ brought to my attention. Baseball HQ brought to my attention was a lot of their statistical output last year was based on piling up the plate appearances and at bats. Because they scored so many runs. If you kind of regress the runs scored back to, you know, top 10 as opposed to the top, then you're looking at much more average output from a lot of their players. Dave Ortiz
losing plate appearances, yeah.
Dave Ortiz, I don't think people realize how good Dave Ortiz was last year. I mean, he was an absolute monster. You are losing him. And on top of that, you're filling a lot of the lineup with a bunch of different things. Sorry, I don't mean to keep going on about the Red Sox.
You're all right, and then you look at it. No, they're awfully dependent on Hanley Ramirez. You don't know how that's going to go. Mitch Moreland, like we mentioned, Pablo Sandoval. If Pablo Sandoval fails, where's their insurance? I mean, I think the lineup is significantly weaker. I don't think Mike Holt or Marco Hernandez can fill the void if Pablo goes down. I know they got some prospects, so maybe Dombrowski can work some magic or something there. But this team's in trouble if Pedroia goes down too, because it's hard to fill multiple. They lost a lot of their depth with some of these trades, and it's hard to fill all these holes. But I'm out of Pedroia. A lot of the reasons Mike gave, I think that he's very, very runs and RBI dependent player, and it's hard to predict with that lineup. And I think the numbers that everyone's projecting are a little overinflated, and not to mention how much of an injury risk he always is. So no, I'll pass.
Yeah, I think the main thing for me is, again, this is a guy that's a compiler. You know, and he needs to be in the lineup. And I just don't trust that he's going to be there day in and day out. I mean, he's a guy that just gets nicked up. I know he plays through a lot, but that's not always a good thing. You know, you much rather, I think, see him go on the DL. Maybe the new DL rules benefits a guy like Pedroia. Maybe he gets more day, you know, maybe he actually goes on the DL a little bit more often, and you can replace him in your lineup with someone off the waiver wire. But for the most part, he's just a compiler, not real interesting in any particular category, and the last thing you need on your team is a compiler that gets injured all the time. So for me, I'm out on Pedroia. Let's go ahead and move on, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pisapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, let's go ahead and jump in. Talk about another guy who's a little bit of an injury risk. That's Devon Travis. Tim, what are your thoughts on Travis this year?
Yeah, obviously you got to see how he does in the spring, you know, coming off the shoulder problem and the knee problem. You know, he's a guy who's kind of living off a little bit of a short sample size success in recent years, you know, hitting those 300s batting averages. People are probably going to want to chase that. You know, he might lead off. That's another reason to kind of really get on him. But I'm not sure he's going to actually add any stolen bases with all that knee, those knee issues. And obviously the bat pip has been very high for his short career. I'm not sure if that's going to last a little bit. He's kind of one of those more do everything type of second baseman, not really excelling in one category for me. Obviously there's, you know, maybe it's the early part of his career. He's going to be turning 26 in next week. So maybe there's something that, you know, might electrify him as he, you know, gets that magical age, quote unquote, which, you know, whatever, what you want to think of that. Obviously the lineup's going to be a little bit different with Edwin Encarnacion. So how's that going to affect his runs? You know, might not help him much there to have Kendrys Morales going there, but you know, there's a little bit to like about him. He could be, you know, a 280 type of hitter, 15 home runs, maybe 10 stolen bases if everything goes right with the health and attempts and stolen bases there. I think there's something there for, you know, a fantasy middle infielder, maybe a low end AL only starter, but I think people might be a little bit too willing to overpay for that batting average. I don't think is going to stay that high for the most part, unless there's a lot more good fortune happens to him, especially because he rarely takes a walk and he strikes out a lot.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Devon Travis?
Yeah, he's an odd fit for the leadoff spot, but Toronto seems to be unconventional with that spot in the order a lot. I don't mind Travis. I think I'll own more shares of Travis this year than I will of Dustin Pedroia. But I also think Travis is a guy. I mean, he's obviously not going to be my second baseman anywhere. If I own him, it's going to be middle infield position, so I can kind of, you know, it's the waiver wire will be always close by to pick up somebody when Travis suffers one of his famous injuries he's been kind of known for in his brief career so far. But the shoulder injury scares me a little bit, but he's a really hard player to peg what you have. I mean, obviously the walk rate, like you guys mentioned, is not good. He does make enough contact. 20% strikeout rate is a little high for a second baseman of this, you know, but in this day and age, it's not terrible for an overall player. It's actually better than average. The BABIP is high, but he's a guy, if you watch him hit, he hits the ball hard. He's a stat cast guy. Exit velocity is always up there when he's in the lineup. He's a guy who could break out. I mean, you look at, you know, Tim said he's approaching that magical age, and he just needs to stay healthy. I mean, you're looking at a guy, he's only had, I mean, doing quick math in my head, 650 at-bats as a pro. I mean, what do you get? I mean, that's just over a full season, and it's hard to know what you have. I'll take a shot here. I think 280. I think 15 homers if he stays healthy. Decent runs total. Decent RBI total for being in the leadoff spot. He might have 60 or so. I kind of like Travis, but, like, again, you got to back it up, and he's got to be your middle infield guy or bench bat. If even you can't go and rely on him as your second baseman.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Travis?
The biggest problem with him is health. And also, when you look at the pedigree in the minor leagues, he was never touted as somebody that was going to be a massive upside guy in the pros in terms of fantasy output. And then, you know, he had a short sample size, like Tim, you know, mentioned earlier, that he just, you know, ended up having a nice little short spurt in 2015. And then last year, you know, coming back after a knee problem, comes in with a shoulder issue, and he had a nice month of June, and then I think he might have aggravated it in some way or did something that the rest of the way just made him much more mediocre. And that's the biggest problem with him, is if he were to stay healthy a whole entire season without any setbacks on anything, then I do think he could have a 2010 type season in terms of home runs, stolen bases, but I can't be anywhere near confident that that's going to happen at any point. I just think that he's more of a batting average guy. And when I say batting average, I mean more in the 280 range. And he is going to sit on top of a lineup that probably is going to be above average. But a lot of these guys are aging a bit. And I can't really count on the Blue Jays to be as stellar as they've been years past as well. So I just think that he's kind of a blah option, and certainly not somebody that presents as much upside as people might think. I'm probably going to be passing in most places.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. years ago, a Blue Jays prospect came up in a short sample size, hit, you know, nine home runs, hit for a good average, and then fantasy circles went crazy for the next few years as he continuously disappointed everybody. Yeah.
Are you reading that off of Lowry?
Brett Lowry.
Yeah, Mike nailed it. Tim's nailing it right now. It was Brett Lowry. Demond Travis is Brett Lowry 2.0.
No way.
You know,
doesn't have nearly doesn't have the hype. No way.
Well, I mean, yeah, he doesn't have the hype, but he also doesn't have Lowry's upside. So, or at least what we thought Lowry's upside was. Devon Travis, people are just going to keep going back to the well with him every year, going, oh, if he can just put it together, if he can just stay healthy, it's not going to happen. And he doesn't have the upside that Lowry had back then, what we thought that Lowry could achieve. I want nothing to do with Devon Travis. I don't think he can stay healthy. He hasn't been able to show it, at least at the major league level yet. I mean, what's his upside if he does stay healthy? Maybe he's like a 2010 guy? Okay, that's good, but it's not like out of this world. And especially if you're playing in a deeper format, you need those at-bats. You need those plate appearances. You need him to be on the field. And to me, there are guys going after him that are just more interesting to me. I would rather have a Logan Forsythe. I would rather have the next guy we're going to talk about who's also an injury risk. I'd rather have Starlin Castro. I just don't think that even at the reduced rate of 206 on NFBC, I just don't think I'm interested in Travis at all. Let's talk about Neil Walker. Again, another injury risk guy, you know, coming off a season in which he was on fire, absolutely killing it, and then unfortunately back injury, missed the rest of the season. Mike, what are your thoughts on Neil Walker this year?
I'm willing to take a shot. I mean, he's not going at a great draft cost, 250th overall. That's not great for what he, especially ending the season with back surgery. That puts him right about, you know, the 20th second baseman in NFBC. But I think that that's fine. I think that, you know, that definitely bakes in the risk that you're taking by drafting him. I love his improvement against lefties last year. He ended up hitting, you know, 330 in 100 at-bats against them. His career mark was 269. 8 of his 23 home runs came against lefties as well. Do I expect that to continue? No. And I wouldn't be being real with you if I wasn't concerned about the fact that he did go through back surgery and what it might do to his power. But even so, you know, this is somebody that has been fairly consistent throughout his career in terms of his output, always been a double digit earner in roto leagues, you know, 15, 15, 20, 15, 17, 13. That was, you know, 6 of the last 7 years in terms of roto dollar value earned, always somebody that hits above 250, not flashy, but still somebody that definitely provides value across the board. The Mets lineup isn't terrible. They have a lot of returning guys, and especially if Lucas Duda and Asdrubal Cabrera, you know, behind him in the lineup work out a little bit, then he could, you know, score a few runs, and, you know, we can see what happens. He's 31, so I think we have a good idea of who he is at this point, and I think that really all you're worried about is the health, and I think we'll know pretty soon, fairly soon in the season, whether he is not healthy but able to, you know, put up the same type of numbers that we've seen from him in the past. So I'm willing to draft him at his cost.
Tim, what about you? Are you in on Neil Walker?
Yeah, I want to see what he does in the spring, but I think I'm a little bit more on Neil Walker than most people as well. You know, obviously the power came back. You know, he basically did what he did in 2014 in about, you know, 100 or so fewer plate appearances. You know, that's very encouraging there. Obviously moving to Citi Field, a little bit better park. He took real advantage of it. He had 17 pull homers last year at Citi. I don't know about Citi Field, but just in general, he's just got his pull game going back up again. I mean, what Mike said about the left-handed pitcher was obviously huge, because that, you know, that's going to seal him in. If he's healthy, he can play against anybody at this point. Even if he does take a drop off there, it's very nice. You know, good spot for run production if he has a full season, you know, 70, 80 RBIs maybe. But like, you know, as mentioned already, the back problem, you're going to want to have to watch that, how he comes back in the spring from that. Obviously, that's a thing that can affect power. And if he can't get lifted like that, he's not a very enticing player without home runs. I'll just say that, because he has stolen no more than 7 bases in any season in his career. Doesn't have the real good speed to make an impact there. Maybe base running options with the Mets decide to run more. But yeah, power first, middle infielder. It's a very interesting. You kind of have to plan your team around drafting a guy like this who might only be a one category player, as we talked about other one category players before.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Neil Walker this year?
I think this Neil Walker at the 20th overall second baseman really does a nice job of capturing the depth of position, because look at the season he had last year, 23 home runs, hit for a really strong batting average for him, 282. I don't think he does that again, obviously, but with the batting average anyways, but I do think the power might be there as long as the back end is healthy. I mean, everything I'm saying is all dependent on his health. I do think he had a little home run per fly ball luck. I mean, one of the stats I like to look at that kind of coincides with that, 23 homers and only 9 doubles. So legit, everything was going over the wall. Nothing wasn't really at the most part for that. But like Mike touched on, he hit lefties a lot better. He's kind of a meh option, but I think it's a really solid option. And like Tim said, he's a guy to watch in the spring, because I mean, getting Neil Walker as your 20th, as the 20th second baseman and around pick 250, this is the kind of thing that can win your league. So he's a guy to watch.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a guy to kind of pay attention to in spring training, because you got to see if the power stroke is back. If the power stroke is back, I'm all aboard, especially at the current value. I mean, you going 250 off the board, that to me screams a steal if he's healthy and the back is holding up, he's able to connect and get the ball over the fence. Because not only did he hit those 23 home runs, he did it in 113 games. So, I mean, not that I think he would necessarily – I don't think you can extrapolate those numbers, obviously, to like 140, 150-game season, mostly because he's only played 150 games in one season once, and that was in 2015. So, but still, I think he would be a sure bet to hit 20, and anything on top of that is gravy, especially because it'll probably come with a 260, 265 average. So – definitely a guy to watch in spring training, but if I've got a draft before then, I'm probably staying away just to be on the safe side. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Cesar Hernandez. Mike, what are your thoughts on Cesar Hernandez this year?
I kind of like him, which makes me laugh a little bit because who likes Cesar Hernandez? But, you know, he was fine last year. On a team that was dead last in runs scored, he still managed to score 67 runs. Is he somebody that hits for power? Absolutely not. But he does possess a little bit of batting average upside. He hit 341 against lefties last year. He's a switch hitter, hit almost 280 against righties, had his 6 home runs all against right-handed pitching as well. I don't think he really has anybody that's going to take his job. He's set to lead off for this team. There's no way they end up last in runs scored again, in my opinion, because you're going to get another full season of Mike Franco, who has developed a bit, you know, since last year. Howie Kendrick's added to the team, who obviously isn't amazing, but he definitely helps. Odubel Herrera is obviously solid. Saunders is there, Tommy Joseph, etc. So I think that even though this team is league average in runs scored, that Cesar Hernandez is going to be the beneficiary of a lot of that. And while he doesn't possess a lot of power, he can steal bases. He has 17 and 19 over the last two seasons. You know, solid batting average, definitely a decent walk rate, 9% and 11% the last 2 years. I think he presents a little bit of a nice buying opportunity. He's going as the 300 pick essentially right now. That's pretty solid for a guy that, you know, what, 23rd second baseman, definitely a solid NL only middle infield option, in my opinion.
Tim, are you in on Cesar Hernandez?
Yeah, a little bit. Obviously, 17 for 30 in stolen bases last year. That's, you know, pretty horrendous percentage there. But that's something that, you know, maybe a guy like this with more playing time, he can start polishing that. There's the raw speed is definitely there. And as Mike said, the OB, you know, the walk rate is a nice it's a nice tool to help him get more opportunities to perfect that. You know, there might be 30 stolen base type of upside here. You know, if he can get that base running intact, that's something that could really, really help him. And, you know, like you said, there's very little competition there. It's in NL-only leagues, that's playing time that, you know, I don't know if it'll be 600 play appearances again, but definitely, you know, a decent, you know, chase for value there for playing time and stuff like that. You shouldn't really ignore buys if no one else is really going to care about it. I don't think he'll hit 290 again, even though he does have the speed to do it and he puts the ball in play better than most think. But yeah, there's a little bit, you know, like I said, I'll buy the stolen base upside and maybe more so in an OBP league than an average league. But yeah, there's a little something there that I wouldn't want to just let slip by for no cost at all.
Matt, would you take Cesar in this?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, he's a very uninspiring option, but I think he's a decent source to batting average. He's not going to kill you in anywhere, really, except for the power numbers. RBI numbers, obviously, too, but he'll make up for it in runs. But the issue I have is it's going to be between him and Freddie Galvis, because J.P. Crawford's going to be up in May. or late April, whenever the service time game is up. And I think he's obviously going to play, and whoever's not performing at that time between Hernandez and Galvis, which Galvis did hit 20-something home runs last year, I believe. I think he had 20 on the nose. Mm-hmm. I know that's fluky, but, I mean, Hernandez also doesn't really have a pedigree. He was kind of looked at as a utility guy when he was coming up. I think he's getting a lot of this playing time as a benefit because of how bad the Phillies were the last couple of years. He's actually getting this opportunity. And it's, like I said, it's going to be between him and Galvis for one spot after Crawford comes up. And it's all dependent on that. For the price you're going, obviously, like Mike said, 300 pick. I mean, if that happens, then you just cut him or whatever. But I'm going to wait a little bit longer, and I'm going to take a Joe Panic later. And I'll be fine with that. Or even a Brett Lowry who's got more playing time guarantee. If I am that desperate at second base, I'll wait longer for somebody that's going to play a little bit more.
I'm totally fine with it. I actually like it. Considering he's going right at 300, 299 on NFBC right now. I mean, everybody keeps talking about how hard it is, you know, to get speed, and you got to draft speed early. These are the kind of guys right here. I mean, 17 stolen bases last season. And, I mean, here's the thing I like. If you look at his month-to-month splits, he had 11 attempts in September. Or, sorry, 7 attempts in September. So, I mean, even though his efficiency wasn't fantastic in August and September, they still let him steal. They still let him go for it, which to me is a sign that they're not going to necessarily put a red light on him if his efficiency isn't great. They're letting the kid run. I like that. I think he's a sneaky pick late, especially in NL only. I love Cesar Hernandez this year for the value. Yeah,
Go ahead,
Matt.
I was just going to say, I guess in a league where you're drafting Hernandez, though, it's going to be deep leagues, and at-bats are currency in those leagues, and I just don't know if he's going to get enough at-bats.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, and that's using my own logic against me, because that's the at-bats is currency is something I always say. But at the same time, with the scarcity at stolen bases wide, I think it's a little bit overblown by the industry as a whole. I mean, this is a guy we're talking about as probably like a $5 or $6 player in an NL only. I mean, at that point, if that doesn't work out, oh well, you're okay. Right. But the upside of potentially 20 stolen bases at the position for virtually nothing, I think is especially valuable in an NL only or a 15 team mix.
I just want to add that Cesar Hernandez had 11 stolen bases in the second half. That was more than Jose Altuve, and his 15.7% walk rate was second among all second basemen to only Ben Zobrist.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he got caught stealing 8 times, which, while that isn't good, they allowed him to keep stealing.
Unless you're in a net stolen base league, it doesn't matter. I guess it does matter if you're worried he's going to get some of his opportunities taken away. Yeah, but other than that, I just don't see the reason to worry about it.
Yeah. Let's move over to Colton Wong, and whenever we talk about disappointing Cardinals, we throw it to Matt first. Matt, would you be willing to take the Wong?
I would. I would take the Wong here, and only here. The thing that's going to help him this year is he's the best defensive infielder they have on the roster. So I think that's going to help him get the majority of the at-bats at second base. I think Jerko is going to end up at third. So I don't think he's going to eat into it that much. But all indications are right now that the Peralta is the opening day third baseman. From everything I've read, Jerko is going to be the roving utility guy that spells everybody. And Wong should play a lot to get the lion's share of the at-bats at second. But the only problem is the guy in the dugout doesn't like Wong, and that's going to lead to not enough at-bats. He was taking the best infielder in the team last year and playing him in the outfield because he doesn't know how to use him. So that was interesting. Wong has made a pledge that he wants to bat toward the top of the order, signing Fowler and having Carpenter. He's not going to do that. But I do think he did show signs in the second half of coming around. The on-base, the walk rate was good in the second half. I do think he still has, I'll probably get killed for this, but I still think he has the 15 homer, 15 steal upside. I really do, but I just don't know if it's ever going to come in St. Louis. I think he needs a change of scenery worse than anyone in the majors right now, but I still like Wong. If he gets the at-bats and injuries strike the Cardinals and he stays healthy and they have to bat him at the top of the order, I think he'd actually be fine because he seems to relish in that role when he gets a chance. But going as late as he is at 327, I mean, I think he can take the shot. But there's guys, Joe Panik's right around there with more at-bats. Brett Lowry, like I mentioned earlier. Even Ryan Schimpf, I kind of like even better than Wonk because of the home runs. But so, yeah, I guess I'm in, but I'm also kind of out. Does that make sense?
Tim, what are your thoughts on Colton Wong?
Yeah, most of what Matt said, I mean, it's obviously the talent I think is there. I think the speed is much better than the stolen bases show. But obviously, you know, we saw him steal 20 bases in 2014, stole 15 in 2015. I think the playing time is actually going to be a little bit more in his favor because he's the lefty of that whole group. Jed Jerko, Johnny Peralta are probably going to be the ones that are really going to be battling out the most for playing time because, Ledmus Diaz, I think, has shortstop
lockdown
there.
Yep.
Yeah, so I wouldn't necessarily worry about Wong compared to Jerko and Peralta as much, but yeah, there's no like Matt said, there's no shot of him hitting ahead of Dexter Fowler or Matt Carpenter. I think he's going to need a lot of dominoes to fall for him to really make the most of his talents, but you know, if you have that stash spot in a deep league, no one really cares about Wong. He's only 26 years old. Obviously, he owns the skills that he showed in 2014, 12 home runs, 20 stolen bases. There's some things that I think that could grow his game. Obviously, the demotion he had last year kind of reignited him, and he had changed his swing before the offseason.
He raked in AAA when he went down. He destroyed. So
there's a couple of things that could work if he has the opportunity. I mean, you don't pay for a starter's opportunity, but you pay for a bench spot where you might say, okay, if this clicks, then that's a guy that could really pay off for me. Just, depends on if anybody else is really looking at it, if you can get him for like a buck in a mixed league or a reserve pick in a mixed league or something like that.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Colton Wong?
In theory, I agree with that. I agree, like, his price is just so cheap, and he should display at least a little bit of the upside we've seen from him in the years past. But my biggest problem is, he's essentially a liability against lefties, right? Because, except for a short sample in 2014 where he hit 350 or 315.
He's not going to play against lefties, it doesn't look like.
So. Exactly. And two of the last 3 years, he's hit 239 or less against right-handed pitching in 2014 and 2016 with a 276 outlier in 2015. For his career thus far, in over 1,000 at-bats, he's a 248 hitter against righties. That's a problem for me. The fact that they have other options on this team. Greg Garcia is a really good defender. I know he sucks, but he's a good defender and he can definitely play second if they need him to. Johnny Peralta, they have other options on this team. I just feel like Colton Wong is a type of guy that if he doesn't start to heat up, then we could see him become a minor leaguer at some point. They obviously signed him to a contract before last season started, yep. And it didn't work out. And I'm not saying that this isn't going to work out in terms of fantasy because I do like Colton Wong and I definitely like the price that he's going at. I definitely think he's worth a speculation buy this season, but I think there's a lot of glaring problems here. Even the BABIP, you want to look there, the BABIP last season, it wasn't really that outrageous. It was 270 for the year. His career is at 280. Hitters make their own BABIPs, and that's not a big fluctuation from his career track record. Not a lot of home run upside. The one thing that you're banking on is possible stolen base opportunities, and the Cardinals were 28th last year and 22nd the year before that in stolen base attempts per game. There's just to me, I'm still holding out hope for Wong, but I feel like as opposed to people thinking that 327 for him right now is outrageous, I think that that's appropriate.
It's a little bit, the Cardinals are talking about this offseason. They've mentioned it in everything I've read. Obviously, everyone knows I'm a Cardinal fan. I try to find everything I can, read everything up on them. The beat writers are very good, Derek Gould and all them guys out there. The Cardinals have preached since this offseason started they were going to get more athletic and they were going to be better on the bases and steal more this year. Now, that's them talking about that and them doing it are two separate things, obviously. And the guy in the dugout set in his ways and whatever. But if
he doesn't believe
who's the guy in the dugout?
The guy that doesn't believe in statistics.
Yeah.
The guy that doesn't believe in statistics and thinks stats used against him by the media are personal attacks on him.
So it's all right. I'm the Mike Matheny of this podcast.
Okay, that's all I want to know is who that actually was, the guy that dugout.
But I mean, they've said all offseason they want to get more athletic and they want to do that. They're talking about all the right things. If you want to get more athletic and better defensively, Wong has to play. So we'll see. If he gets the playing time at second base, like I said, because he's a really good defensive player at second. He's one of the best in the league. If they let him play there and don't mess with him, I think he's the type of guy that can hit. But the manager likes to tinker, and I don't know if Wong sitting twice a week isn't good for him. He needs to play every day, and I think that's the problem because he hasn't put up numbers to produce. But hey, the manager doesn't like stats, so who cares what he does, right?
I'm sorry. That is the when you showed me that earlier today, that Mike Mazzini says stats
a personal attack.
Yeah, stats are a personal attack against him. Yeah.
Oh, man, that is my favorite thing ever.
Did you see the thing I tweeted with the? Ever seen the picture of the dog just sitting and drinking coffee, and the whole kitchen's on fire in his house, mm-hmm. and he's saying like, "This is fine." That's what I. Yeah. That's what I tweeted out. I said, as a Cardinal fan with Matheny as a manager, oh, this is fine. Doesn't believe in stats, so this is fine. Perfect.
Yeah, I tweeted out maybe the Cardinals should take a couple zeros off his paycheck and see if he still believes in or doesn't believe in stats.
He's the type of guy that probably still keeps showing up for work too, like office space. No one knows why he's there. He'll just keep showing up.
You about my stapler?
The problem for me with Wong is what Matt mentioned at the beginning. Is I think he just needs a change of scenery. I don't think it's ever going to work out in St. Louis. And luckily enough. For St. Louis and for him, he's got a pretty team-friendly deal, at least for the next two of the 3 years remaining on his contract. So maybe they could move him for a different piece. But I think the infield is crowded. For some reason, Matheny doesn't like it. I mean, Matthew Berry used to, say people or talk about people having a Mott-like hatred for players. And I think that Matheny just does not like Wong, which is unfortunate for him, but I don't want to have anything to do with him this year until he gets moved to another team. All right. I have Jed Lowry on this show notes because I just started to run out of guys. We're going to be talking about 30 of them this week in terms of the three podcasts. So, Tim, any interest in Jed Lowry?
Oh, God. I almost refused to come on this show when you showed me the outline with Jed Lowry on it. I mean, obviously, we've seen a little bit of power from him. He's playing in Oakland. He's going to play 300 at-bats per year. The home park sucks for what he wants to do, for what fantasy owners want him to do. Ground ball increase last year just, kind of defines where he's at right now. He doesn't do anything good. I really have a hard time doing anything with him except maybe an AL-only league as a playing time guy. They're just, biding their time for Franklin Barreto to get there. Maybe that's where Colton Wong should go, to Oakland instead.
Mike, any interest in Jed Lowry?
I do think he gets the majority of the playing time while he's healthy, but that's the biggest problem is, four, five, six of the last 8 years, he has not been able to, get over the 338 at bat mark or 340 at bat mark. And that's just a problem. He doesn't steal bases. He's not a batting average guy. Sometimes he does have spikes in his batting average, but it's nothing you can rely on. I just, he's playing at a bad home ballpark. There's just really a lot more negative things to say about Lowry than good. And, mind you, his price is, outside of the top 500 in draft. So I suppose you could do worse in AL only if you were in the spot that you were in earlier today, Justin, during your CBS draft. Where you needed somebody for like a dollar, maybe you could go with somebody like Lowry that's going to get playing time at the beginning of the year. But I'm sure they're going to try and flip him and get Barreto up there or some of their other guys, Pinder, Joey Wendell, guys like that.
Yeah, he went for about $3 or $4 today in the CBS auction. And I literally he got nominated. And I'm doing the Facebook Live
bathroom break.
I was desperate for a middle infielder, absolutely desperate. And I just went, I can't do it. I can't spend $2 on Jed Lowry. I'm just not going to do it to myself. Oh. So because the only place he is even viable is in like an AL, a 12 team AL only, and in those leagues, like Matt mentioned earlier, and I mention all the time, at bats are currency. You need them to play. Because it comes, at the end of the season, it typically comes down to whose guys stayed healthy, whose guys compiled the most at bats, and Jed Lowry's not going to help in that sense. So he's more of a detriment and negative value than a positive value. So I don't want to have anything to do with Lowry. Matt, you gonna clean sweep this one?
Yeah, man, I'm with you. And I think the thing, even in an AL only league, is if Lowry proves to stay healthy, like Mike said, I think they're going to move him anyways. And you don't know where he's going to go. So
and most likely he becomes a utility infielder. He's not going to start anywhere.
No, and I think there's zero upside. there's nothing, no upside. If you're in a mixed league and you're desperate for a second baseman, draft Dilson Herrera instead. Don't take Lowry.
Yep. All right, that's going to wrap us up. Tim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. That was a pleasure, I think, until Jed Lowry. So way to end on a high note.
You survived my Mike Matheny rant. So.
And well, Mike Justin Boston rant.
Yeah, Justin left a couple names off the list, actually. We were going to talk about Andres Blanco and Chad Pinder, but yes. We didn't have time.
Oh, man, Pinder would have been great. I would have talked about him for sure.
Oh, and Ryan Goins. I missed it. Sorry, Ryan Goins as well.
Yeah. Studs.
Tim, why don't you remind everybody where they can reach you on Twitter and then give yourself some plugs.
You guys can make fun of what I said on this podcast on Twitter at Tim_Heaney, HEANEY. RotoWire, we got our draft kit out right now. We got our magazine out. You can actually have a package where you can buy both. You can also try the website out for free for 10 days. And as Justin, you know, so eloquently stated before, we have our draft software out now where you can practice your mock draft and get used to it before your actual draft. You know, run through your strategy, upload your own rankings, practice your NFBC strategy there. And one thing I forgot to mention before, I'll be writing for the next couple of weeks a rebound candidate series on RotoWire. Those will be free articles, so you can get those a little bit easier. But you know, you can also check out the stuff as a subscriber as well for that trial as well. So you know, keep up with the news with us, and I'll be starting podcasts again beginning of March.
Awesome. Matt, what are you working on, and where can people reach you?
Oh, got the top. I think I'm settling on 200. I don't know. You saw the list I sent over today, Justin. There's quite a bit more than 200 guys on there.
I want a top 1,000.
It's closer to 1,000 than 200, and I don't know how much stock you can put into it after a certain number. But I'll have a prospect list out in the middle of this week. If you're listening to this, it'd be on Monday or Tuesday. So I'll probably have it out on Thursday or Friday is my guess. You can read about it there at the drop. It'll definitely be 200 at least. We'll see more than that. I mean, obviously everyone liked the prospect pieces this year, so thank you for listening to all those. And Prospect Pod with me, Mike, and our newcomer, Andy, on the show there. So listen to that. That's every Thursday. So, yeah, enjoy it.
Mike, where can people reach you? What are you working on?
Yeah, thanks again, Tim, for coming on. It's always nice to have you aboard the show. Just so everybody knows, Fred Zinke actually just took Cesar Hernandez in round 21. That's sneaky, sneaky devil. So
I like that.
Great value.
Yeah. Actually, right behind or right in front of Orlando Arcia, actually, who actually created some buzz on our Facebook chat.
And Colton Wong went first pick round 18. So Hernandez, much better, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a better pick. Yep. I think we could all agree about that, which is kind of crazy.
Where's Jed Lowry?
Mike Matheny would have drafted Hernandez in front of Wong, too, so that's
fine. He's probably on plenty of people's queues at this point. That's where I think he is, probably on a bunch of people's queues. But, yeah, you can check me out on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out anything I write on FrozenFantasyBenefits.com. Check out our rankings. Check out our podcast. Like Matt said, we're doing the Prospect Show on there. Check out my daily matchups column on Baseball HQ this season. And I am working on my ranks for the Fantasy Pros expert ranking platform that they have there as well. So check it all out.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can read all my stuff either at Fangraphs or at FriendsOfFantasyBenefits.com. I've got my ranks up on FriendsOfFantasyBenefits.com. They're going to be updated probably as of Wednesday or Thursday. I'll put a new update up. They are currently updated on the Fantasy Pros site, and they are also going up on the Fangraphs site. So no matter where you look for my stuff, you will find my rankings. I just did an article on my 2017 lottery ticket team, the hitters edition. Those are guys being drafted outside the top 450 that are interesting lottery tickets for this season. I'm going to do a pitcher's edition probably next week. This week I'm going to try to cover my results from the AL CBS auction.
And we hit the over.
We hit the over.
What the hell?
No way.
I thought I was going to win that because we got.
Yes.
He was saving that one.
I told you I'd get there. It was a really interesting experience. If you're friends with me on Facebook, or even if you're not, you can actually find me on Facebook. It's totally public profile, so you can go there and and check out the 4-hour-long Facebook Live if you want to go watch it. It was a really fun, interesting way to do it. I would not recommend watching 4 hours of it, though. And I'm going to do something like that for the Barf Draft coming up, and I'm sure we'll do some Facebook Lives from Tout Wars, because me and Mike have bought our tickets to Tout Wars. We are on our way there in just about a month's time.
Yeah, it's going
to
be fun.
We're going to hang out with Tim. Yeah. We're going to hang out with a lot of other guys who are over there. We are going to try to poison someone's food so we can actually get into one of the drafts. So definitely, if you haven't been on this podcast and you're not a friend of ours,
before the mix auction.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're not going to poison any of our friends who've come on the podcast, but you know, some of you guys who refuse to, you know, industry guys who refuse to answer my tweets and emails, you better watch out. Definitely give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really, really helps us out if you do, and take a screenshot of it. And send it to me on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or at friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. I'll make sure you get into the Listener League or eligible to win other prizes. And if you don't have iTunes, if you're using another service, go ahead and give us whatever the highest review is, like the podcast, whatever. Send me a copy of it, and I'll get you entered into something. You know, not everybody has iTunes, so I understand that. And some people have reached out to me like, hey, I don't have iTunes, but I want to get in Listener League, or I want to be eligible to win prizes. You know, send me whatever you got, and I'll make sure you get in. And then, you know, attempt to steal someone else's phone that has iTunes and give us a review that way, because it definitely helps us out. We've actually moved in to the top 10 in fantasy baseball on iTunes this season. We're over doubled our listenership from last season at this time. We're the number one explicit fantasy baseball podcast on iTunes.
How about them apples? Yes. Yeah, so, and we're getting great feedback. I know a couple people have really been – I'm sorry I don't have your names, but everybody that's been leaving feedback, I just want to say personally we really appreciate it, and we work really hard. I'm glad you guys recognize that, and you know, just keep listening.
Yeah. So
I got to tell Chrysalis to curse more to match up with you guys then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See if the guys over RotoWire can drop a few F-bombs.
It's so fun as usual, guys. Awesome.
Well, we appreciate you coming on, Tim. You're always a blast on. We will definitely have you on in season. But that will wrap this show up. For Tim, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.